for choice to live, options must die. So anytime you go through a strategic planning with an organization or a group of leaders get together and they talk about, hey, what's important? What's most important? By the time you finish, you'll look at the wall and you'll see everything looks important. So basically, we've talked, but we haven't actually prioritized.
Unleashing your best in life and work. This is The Game Changers with Eric Bolles and host Dale Dixon.
Leading with purpose means knowing the priority. Welcome to the Game Changers podcast. I'm your host, Dale Dixon. This is all about unleashing your best in life and work with Eric Bolles. Eric, so good to see you today on the podcast.
I appreciate you, Dale. Glad to be back.
If you haven't subscribed, please do so. It makes it easier for other people looking for leadership content to find this podcast as they are out searching. And really, our goal, I think I can speak for both of us, Eric, is to bring maximum value in a minimal amount of time to folks who are busy, to leaders who are busy and want to up their game. So
that's right.
Okay. Eric is an executive coach, a leadership expert, a change consultant, and a keynote speaker. Today, as I said, we're on this journey talking about leading with purpose, and we are on the priorities side of the house. And I would give us that brief background for anybody who's just joining us for the first time or wants a quick refresher, because this is our fourth in a series of conversations about this. And you talk about how we live our life like a ship, and there's the below the waterline aspect and there's an above the waterline aspect. First two podcasts were about below the waterline. You got to go back and listen to those if you haven't already. But above the waterline is where we're at right now, and this setting priorities is a big one. So give us that brief background.
Okay, definitely. So when we talk about lead with purpose, we use the metaphor of a sailboat who's going on a journey. The goal is to get somewhere. So many times when it comes to leadership, we set a vision, we have a destination. But on that journey, in between where you start and where you want to end up on this ship, it's inevitable you're going to face winds. There's going to be storms. Any leader right now knows that's the case. I mean, you know, all kinds of things are taking place leading right now in this difficult time. But what allows us to be most effective isn't just our ability to set our sails, or what we like to say, everything that you see above the waterline, which is the sails and the rigging and all that. We bring up both above the waterline and below the waterline because what's happening beneath the surface matters even more so. And so we use the metaphor as the keel of the ship. And the keel for a leader is a leader's ability to be authentic, to be vulnerable, to be present, and to be courageous. Now, those are ways of being, but they have practical application. A leader who's authentic lives in alignment with their values. A leader who is vulnerable, they're able to access feedback. They get information to and fro. They're going to work hard anyway, so you might as well work hard with good information, and it really helps from a feedback standpoint. The ability to be present, it's your ability to pay attention, to be in the moment. It's one of the greatest leadership tools that a leader could master. It's not something you try to do. It's something you train to do. And one reason we got to be present in those moments is because over 90% of all communication is nonverbal. So we talk about listening, not just with your ears, listening with your eyes, being able to see what other people just look at. And then lastly, we talked about being courageous, because that's the virtue by which all those things depend. Now, that's great when you have a strong keel beneath the surface, but you are actually trying to get somewhere, right? And so when it comes to the measurable things that matter, especially to a business leader, the people they lead, but primarily your customers or whoever it is that you serve, man, it's about problem solving. I say every leader, if a leader had a job description, the best title would be problem solver, right? I once heard that most people will be remembered for one of two things, either the problems you solve or the problems you create. And so as a leader, we want to be known for the problems that we solve. And so we had a great conversation about that last time. Those who may not have had the chance, please go through it. It's a problem solving process that we go through. But the ultimate goal is not to just be a problem solver, but to be able to develop and lead others in being problem solvers. So everybody begins to solve problems at a minimum, at least at the level of their job description. My experience from all the coaching I've done, I see many leaders who are extremely busy And they're solving all kinds of problems, but many of the problems they're solving are beneath their job description, not at the level of it. So everybody's just performing, working really hard, but just not using it in high leverage activities, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about today, though, the focus is on prioritizing. And so with the same principle that we talk about problem solving, not only do we want to be, as business leaders, good prioritizers, but we want to have a team of people who understand how to prioritize.
So I'm curious about your approach to that, to the word priority. So we're going to start with a bit of defining and definition of the word, because I'm always careful when I hear myself start to talk about priorities and when I use it in the plural sense, because if I'm stacking a bunch of things all at the same level of priority, then it's not a priority.
That's right.
So I'm really cautious that it's priority, not priorities. And so that's me, and I would like to hear your approach to that, so that we, as we listen to this and we put all the pieces together, we're all on the same page.
Okay, so point number one, Dale. First of all, you said it best. If here's a group of our priorities. Now, if there's a group of our priorities, that means you don't have a priority. Okay. And the one reason why prioritizing is so hard, and this is why courage is a big thing. And I want those in the room to be able to hear. I apologize if you can hear my dog in the room with him. He was courageous by demanding that he's in this room with me when I do this podcast. Right? So, but with that being said, prioritizing, actually getting to what is not just important, but what's imperative. This is a real challenge for a lot of leaders because it requires decision making. It requires being decisive. Now, one point I want to make about the word decide. The word decide is a kill word. Think about it. Pesticide, homicide, decide. Okay. And what it simply means is that in order for choice to live, options must die. So anytime you go through a strategic planning with an organization or a group of leaders get together and they talk about, hey, what's important? What's the most important? By the time you finish, you'll look at the wall and you'll see everything looks important. So basically we've talked, but we haven't actually prioritized. In order to prioritize, that means things have to be grouped. Something has to be put second or third or fourth. Something has to become what's our first focus. So when we talk about prioritizing for a leader, you need a tool or you need a way to almost create criteria for what ends up being first. So what I want to talk about now is not necessarily giving people a as much as a process, you know, in terms of prioritizing, in terms of just what the process is, it's a way of thinking. I mean, this shouldn't just impact how you do business. It should have an influence on all areas of your life.
I've got a feeling that people have placed a mental bookmark on something you said, and then you dove right in. But if I heard you right, you said, in order for choice to live, options must die.
Yes.
Okay.
In order for choice to live, options must die. This is why decision-making is so hard. Nobody wants to kill off anything. So we want to keep everything as a possibility, which means nothing becomes one. And so at some point, that has to die, that has to die, that has to die. Even though they look like good ideas, if they're just mixed with everything else, they're not good ideas. They're just distractions. They're good-looking distractions. They create this false belief that eventually we'll get to it, but it causes us to get to nothing. And so at some point, we have to commit to take an action on something. Now, later on, if you need to resurrect it, okay. But the initial decision of what are we going to do first? What is it that we're going to place our focus on? That has to happen. And what I see, and this isn't just what I see, and all of us struggle with this. Decision making is hard. But I say it the same way, just like when somebody decides to get married, ideally, okay, in order for that choice, who I've chosen in my marriage, for that to thrive, all the other options had to die off. Not literally, but figuratively, right? They shouldn't still be options. If they're still options, that's a problem, okay? And it works the same way when it goes to us pursuing a goal or going after what we really want to go after. Man, Dale, I say it again. Very rarely do people not reach their goals because of lack of competency or lack of ability or didn't have a good vision in the first place. The majority of reasons why we don't reach our goal, broken focus. It's the primary reason. We, along the journey, we just get distracted. And many times the distractions, we don't even call them distractions. We think it's just normal. No, we got a focus problem. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways that we help with that process of identifying what should be the choice and what are the options that aren't as paramount, it goes back to a Italian economist back in the, it was born in the 1800s, died in the early 1900s. His name was Vilfredo Pareto, the Italian economist. We all know the term, the 80-20 rule. Now, I am not only a fan of the 80-20 rule, but I'm a fan of 80-20 thinking. Like, I still remember the first time I read or heard him speak, the first time I read the book by Richard Koch, the 80-20 rule. It was a game changer for me because I've heard it in so many different ways. I've heard it expressed in so many different ways. But the way he articulated this one statement that he said, and it impacted me as an athlete, let alone how it impacted me as a business leader. He said, there is an imbalance between inputs and outputs. There's this belief that there's actually a balance in it, that if I give this much input, it produces this much output. That is incorrect. There's an imbalance. The reality is, for those of business leaders who I'm talking to right now, your customers, 20% of what you do is what produces 80% of the value for your customers. Now, what's important is, do you know what that 20% is? Because if 80% of the value produced only comes from 20% of what you do, isn't it a good idea to do more of that 20%? But the opposite takes place. We actually allow the 20% that has the greatest influence get swallowed up, lost inside of all that 80% nonsense. I like to say it this way. We allow the vital few things to be swallowed up by the trivial many things. And because we just take action without thought, we get really busy doing things that don't make a big difference. I remember sitting back and a guy said, hey, if you ever want to really know how this rule works, it's how we do everything. He said, what do you mean? He goes, you wear 20% of your closet 80% of the time. He goes, you get 80% of the value of a book, especially nonfiction, is found in 20% of the book. I would say somebody listening, now it's not the same for every person, but how you individually go into it, it's like this podcast. There's a high probability that you will only remember 10 to 20% of what I say, but that will produce 80% of the value for that particular person listening to this. Now, this alone, what I just got through saying, could be a game changer for a business leader. Like, do we know what matters most? Or another way of saying it, do we know what's most imperative? And if I know what's most imperative, do my folks know what's most imperative? A quick little business example. As an executive coach, and I don't say this to impress anybody. I say this to impress upon them. I'm very fortunate about who I've been able to coach. Very significant roles. Very Fortune 500, Fortune 250, both private, public, huge organizations, and working with those executives at the very top, which is phenomenal. But here's the facts. The facts are, I have none of those connections and none of those relationships because I have a great-looking website. Okay, none of those relationships were a result of, hey, some really great marketing. Does marketing matter? Without question. But in that part of my business, it's the relationship I have with a couple leaders who, when impacted, then turn around and share with one of their peers. How I've been able to help them is what led me to being able to help someone else. Why? Because where they sit, there's a lot of people who work really hard to keep stuff from them. So if I am not able to have word of mouth marketing between them because of credibility, then, okay, there's a mistake. Now, why would I spend 90% of my time working on marketing to a broad public when 90% of my business is the result of individual relationships with individuals who make decisions for a lot of people? Now, I can be working really hard, I mean really hard on marketing and really hard on effort, but if I don't know where to channel that effort, all that extra work is just waste. These are the points I try to make to leaders is sit back, evaluate everything. Where are you investing energy? Where are you investing time? Where are you investing dollars? Where are you investing focus? And look at the 80-20 rule. What's the 20% that what you do produces 80% of the return? And if you don't know that answer, start having conversation with your customers so you can find out. But because it could have shifted. It could have changed. And the last place you want to find out the change happens is when they decide to go somewhere else who can produce what they consider value.
So, I'm going back in my mind to our most recent conversation as we were talking through this concept of helping people be fantastic problem solvers and the conversations at the table and ultimately how the interconnection of this in that when you're having those conversations about solving problems, the 80-20 rule is going to help get to the heart of what those problems are as well. And it's an opportunity for us to use that same principle that you led us through around problem solving into identifying what's the 20% that our customer is deriving from us, or what's the 80% that our customer is deriving from our 20% of effort?
That's
the right way to say that.
That's exactly the right way to say it. And that's exactly the thought. Because again, like we said before, we're going to work hard anyways, but we want to make sure all of our effort is highly leveraged. This is why the 80-20 rule helps us discover what's the high leverage activities. So when I talked about having clarity earlier, clarity leads to focus. And focus, what we want to have our focus on is the high leverage, high value activities that produce the greatest return. And what investment do we have to make? Our time, our resource, and our talent. So for a business leader, sit back and go, can we ensure that our time, you know, which is limited, our talent, which is limited, our resources, which is limited, is going to get the greatest return possible, then what's the 20% that makes 80% difference? Now, if you want to take it even further, you can go 10-90, you can go 199. But the bottom line is to understand this isn't a 50-50 thing. Like, if we put 50% of our effort here, we're going to get 50% return right here. No, it doesn't work like that. So many people think we have a tendency to be mediocre at a whole lot of things because we don't give enough effort, enough focused energy into something that can really be a difference maker. Now, how you evaluate what's the 20% that make the 80% difference? Remember, we said 20%, you want to spend 80% of your time as much as you possibly can on the 20% that makes the biggest difference. Now, the 80-20, what's 80-20 for each area of the business is not all the same, right? Like, I do a lot of work, and I don't mind mentioning, but with Collins Aerospace. So they do some phenomenal work, some unbelievable things that they do. But also when you're involved in research and development, when you're involved with major innovation, like the way you're defining value changes based on what your goal is, right? It's not all the same. There's some people whose 80-20 rules dictate it with maintaining current relationship. Some other people's 80-20 has to do with creating new opportunity, wherever it fits. But we still have to be able to be clear about what produces value and what doesn't. Now, the reason this is so important is once we have a chance to look at it and talk about it, our goal isn't not necessarily how do we find more time to invest in the 20% that makes the 80% difference. No, The prioritizing is designed to stop doing this so you can do more of that, right? What we want to eliminate is as much time as we're spending on activities that don't produce a return. So it's not like I got to just go find time. No, we got to ask ourselves this is why I like to say the 80-20 rule is a very truth-bearing exercise, right? And I love doing it with leaders with their teams, because there's oftentimes leaders do not realize how much time gets invested many times in some of the things they just have a preference to, not things that are actually producing a return. There's a chance that some leaders sit back and go, man, we spend a lot of time doing some things that aren't adding value, but we've just been doing them traditionally so long that we never realized that's a bad habit that we need to get out of. See, that's where when people say, how do we find more time? That's where you're looking. You're looking at the things that aren't working anymore. That's a bad use of your energy. It's like in football, I say all the time, man, look, I hate to say it this way, but there's a reason why sometimes a quarterback won't throw to a receiver even though the receiver is open, right? And I know that sounds bad, but, you know, why didn't you throw it to him? Because there might be a 50-50 proposition that he catches it. And if he doesn't catch it, it's a wasted play. But this receiver over here, even though he's covered, he has a tendency to catch 80% of the passes, even when in tight coverage. That is just a better probability. So it's not about whether I like you or don't like you. Many times, that's the best play for the greatest return. Why? Because we have a limited number of plays. We get to run every game. It's not an unlimited supply. And sometimes leaders look at time like it's unlimited, or they look at resource like it's unlimited. It's not. And here's what's even more dangerous. You don't know when your customer it's finally fed up, or you don't know when your customer is no longer finding value because you're not quite sure what matters most to them.
Number of ways, places I want to take this, but you can change the names to protect the guilty, but okay. You mentioned working with a client in an exercise to identify priorities.
Yes.
Set that up. What does that take us inside the room when you are with a group and you're working on this prioritization exercise? Step by step, what does that look like?
Step by step. So the first thing that I do is, and it's practical, but the first thing I do, no matter who the group is, what the group is, whatever, is the first thing we go back to is, okay, what's your vision, goals? If we want to be very specific, okay, tell me this quarter's key performance indicators. Tell me what your objectives are, whatever the case may be. So they have that. Then we ask a different question, which is, we're not going to just have this conversation randomly. We want to make it real. So pull out your calendar. Everybody in the room, pull out your calendar. And they almost look at, I mean, I'm dealing with executives in the room. Pull out your calendar, right? And now all I want you to do is look at a day in the life of, or for some cases, a week in the life of. How many activities are you having this week that are in alignment with what you've told me you guys want to make happen? If you ever want a truth-bearing exercise, there you go. How many of these activities align with what goal I just said is going to take place? Because the reality is, you may see a lot of activities, but if you can't attach that activity to that goal, or more importantly, is even inside of that activity, is it a high leverage activity that can quickly get to where you're trying to get to? Because if the answer is no, then something has to change. Either your goal needs to change and be consistent with your daily behaviors, or your daily behaviors need to change to align more with the goal. It's like when I hear people say all the time, what's your goal? My goal is to get in great shape. I was like, fantastic. By when? By March. And it's January. Okay, have you started yet? Not yet, but I'm starting next week. Okay, great. Understand that you've already missed this week. There is a certain number of reps that are inevitable that you have to do to produce that kind of return. Now, if you don't set those up, or if you other things get in the way of you being able to do that, either change the date where you expect to get in shape, or just change the goal in itself. Because we have a tendency to, if this makes any sense, we have the tendency to place value on things that either take a long time or cause us to feel really busy, right? And I say many times, being busy is about as productive sometimes as doing absolutely nothing. Okay. And so do not confuse activity or busyness without being productive. That's why having these type of prioritizing conversations, and I like truth bearing exercise, because it causes you to confront what you actually do daily. Reggie White, who I got to play with when I was with the Green Bay Packers, and Reggie used to have a saying, and I don't know where he got it from, but I loved it. He says, "Eric, champions are celebrated in the light, but they're made in the dark. They're made when no one's looking." I tell companies all the time, hey, your success, it's going to be celebrated in the light. It's going to be celebrated in the press. But it's made in the dark, in those rooms when you decide what you will do and what you're not going to do. And I tell you, I forget, it was a wonderful quote by Steve Jobs. I'm not quoting him perfectly. But when they asked him, when what was most fulfilling, or when did you actually know? And he said it best. He goes, when there was nothing else to remove. That's when he knew he was on the where success was there. Not how many more things can we do. He was like, no. He goes, creativity is creating options. Concentration is the removal of options. And so the 80-20 rule helps people remove lack of focus. It gets those eyes locked onto what really matters most.
Okay. I have a feeling we could come back and talk through this even more because my head's swirling. But the biggest thing, the takeaway for our audience, for myself, as I think through this and my business and what's going on, is to go back and really have that honest conversation. And I love the fact that it can start with something as simple as my calendar. And does my calendar align with the goal? And that's a prioritization exercise. And where am I getting the most bang for the buck, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, one of the things, I'd make this one point, Dale, before leaving it. Many people think about prioritizing and start thinking about time management. And I get that, right? We think about time management. Now, 80-20 thinking, it's more like a time revolution. I mean, it throws it upside down. I mean, all of a sudden, I start looking at things and going, okay, a lot of things are important, but what's imperative? Like, truly, what's imperative? And when these kind of questions are being asked, there's a time where one of the most powerful questions that a team or a conversation a team could have is, I've done this where leadership teams who've been part of a strategy and all this stuff have sat back and went, should we even be doing this at all? Like, we've made this an initiative and it just doesn't fit. Like, what was the reason we were doing that again? And so when people talk about saving time, I mean saving time, resources, and everything, and an individual's preference cannot be strong enough to handcuff the whole organization. And sometimes there's an individual, a leader, a certain person who's like, oh, I really want this. And that's great that you want it, but filter it through a truth-bearing exercise and they may come to the conclusion like, I did want it, but it's not as good as the idea as I thought. Man, that's what the reason is. That's why courage still matters, right? Like, we got to be willing to have that courageous conversation, right? It's necessary.
And don't get married to your idea. Don't get married to your busyness. That's what I'm hearing you say. Don't get married to your busyness.
You know,
it's wasted motion.
I never forget that there was an assessment done, and it was done in Canada, but I'm so sorry not being able to quote exactly where it came from. But they assessed, and they said that for most managers, they spend about, what they say, 4 to 7 minutes total on all different issues throughout the day. Rarely do they spend any more time on anything more than 4 to 7 minutes. Okay. It's been said that it takes really 15 minutes of uninterrupted thought time to really get to a place where your real creative energy really kicks in. First of all, no one ever gets to 15 minutes, typically, right? And then if you are at 15 minutes, once interrupted, it takes 20 to 30 minutes to get back to the same place. And so not only is that not happening, there's a lot of managers who have now been conditioned to believe that busyness is actually being productive. And so we've confused activity with productivity, we place greater value on presence than actual performance. I mean, these are the kind of things by really using this 80-20 rule in this type of way makes the biggest difference in the world. We'll come back to this, Dale. This is a big area. And so just for those listening, we'll make sure we come back, because there's the 80-20 rule in business, in management, in teams, but there's also the 80-20 rule in how you live it in your own personal life, which is a game changer. And we want to make sure we give the audience a chance to hear that.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that one. So as we wrap this series up on leading with purpose, the next place we go, I understand, is people development and vision.
Yes. Yeah. So one thing I want to say around the people development, we talked about the 80-20 rule when it comes to people. I mean, when it comes to priorities, time, projects, the service area. But the 80-20 rule also works when it comes to people too. And when people hear me say this, I want them to realize this isn't about discriminatory action. This isn't about isolating one group from another. It's not that. I believe, I think John Maxwell said it best, you nurture everybody. The goal is to nurture, love your whole team, everybody who's part of your organization. But you must develop a few. And when we talk about developing a few, that must be done intentionally. There is no such thing as giving the same amount of time to everybody. Now, when I say time, I'm talking about development time, which can include certain opportunities or certain stretch opportunities. People have to qualify, all right? There has to be a sense of qualification, right? I'm just not going to give a random opportunity to everybody. Why? Because not everybody's worthy, deserving of it. The word deserving means of service. Too many times, people don't confuse the word deserve with entitled. If I deserve something, the word deserve means of service. I qualified for that. And so what that means when it comes to people, in developing people, who are you developing? Who are you growing, developing, increasing their capacity? More importantly, for you to truly be successful, you got to know who's going to be your successor. And please, I hope it isn't just because they're related to you, right? Like, I hope it's for much better reasons than that. One particular group who I work with, and I challenge this way, especially in the environment that function in high sales environment. I said, listen, make sure the people that you're developing and coaching, you see as opportunity, they're not just people who have no obvious weaknesses. Okay. The real question is, what is their glaring strength? Because sometimes when there's no obvious weaknesses, it just means they ain't tried anything, right? Like, they've been playing it safe the whole time, right? They've just, you know, some people are in positions of influence because they interview really well, right? But I'm telling you, you want to know, if I had to step away, who am I developing? Who am I pouring into? Who am I coaching on purpose? And this isn't necessarily about reading a book. I can give people 17 different ways of processes for developing people, step by step by step. The more valuable thing is, do you recognize talent and capability in the first place? Because that's a skill. And the second thing is, are you giving them opportunities that stretch them, that grow them, that take them at times a little bit out of their comfort zone? Not immediately, but it takes them out there. Are they getting some of the nuance of what it is that you do? This is why in sports, there's such a value in what we call the player development department, right? But the player development department includes two parts. It includes being able to define the talent, and then it's also critical with developing the talent. It's not enough to just find the talent. You also got to develop the talent. Because when you find a talent, you're basically not finding talent, you're finding potential, right? There's talent there, but it hasn't actually translated into performance yet. So we need both. And so when leaders talk about all the time, hey, Eric, you know, I'm really thinking about our future. I'm telling you, and hopefully this makes some sense right here. People are always looking to find talent. I think that's important. But everyone listening, I want you to hear, and you see this in baseball, you see this in football, you see this in professional sports. It's very important that you develop the talent that's already in-house. Because there's a tendency to overpay for free agents. Okay? And so, don't get me wrong, it's good to bring in talent. But it's also really awesome to develop the talent that's there. Because when you can develop talent that's there and then bring in talent, now I don't have to worry about my culture being overridden. But if I have a strong culture and I develop the talent there, it will attract other talent. Other talent will want to join that when it's done the right way.
That matches the culture.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
All right, Eric. There's so much passion around this. It's exciting. And we try to keep these podcasts 20 minutes or so, and we're at 35 minutes closing in. So that gives, but there has been a tremendous amount of help and information, inspiration through this conversation. So thank you for that. Like we said, the next conversation is around people development. We're going to dive into this area, and you heard the passion in Eric's voice around this topic, this idea. We're going to unleash that as we unleash your best in life and work in this podcast. So we're looking forward to it. And if you would like to get in touch with Eric, a few ways you can do that. You can connect with him on LinkedIn. Just do a quick search for his name on LinkedIn. You will find him. Also, the Game Changers Inc.com is the website where you can find out more about Eric and what he does. So with that, we would appreciate you rating and reviewing this. Hopefully we've earned 5 stars from you in your favorite podcast listening app. And while you're there, subscribe. And if you think this would be helpful for your team, make sure and send a link to this podcast to anybody, any leader in an organization that you think this would help. We would really appreciate that. That's how you can pass this on. Any other final words?
No, just you know, I said no, and then I'm about to give some final words. but I just I don't want the point missed that I've said in each one of these. These aren't things we're trying to do. These are things we're training to do. And so I always remind leaders that it's a process. We will get better and better and better at this the more we do it. Once we strengthen that prioritizing muscle, you'll start looking at everything in a way where you're always looking for what's the 20% that makes the 80% difference. It will just naturally help you start filtering down to what actually matters most.
One of my favorite quotes is from Dennis Waitley: spontaneity is conditioned reflex. So if you are practicing this idea of looking for and finding and fighting for the 80-20, you'll turn it into a conditioned reflex where it becomes automatic. But to your point, it takes practice. So that's what it's all about. All right, Eric, thank you so much. We appreciate this. We look forward to the next conversation. Eric Bowles coaches, trains, and inspires leaders to unleash their potential and the potential of those around them. This is the Game Changers Podcast. Have a fantastic week.
The Game Changers, unleashing your best in life and work with Eric Bowles and Dale Dixon. Eric is an executive coach, leadership expert, change consultant, and keynote speaker. Read his book, Moving to Great, and find him at ericbowles.com. Connect with Dale at daledixonmedia.com.